This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad, Khatamil Anbiya'i wal Mursaleen. صلوات الله وسلامه عليه وعليهم أجمعين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. We continue from where we left off with the janazah salah. We are currently looking at the salah for the absent deceased. It is permissible to perform the funeral prayer for an absent person whose body is out of town. So this is not a funeral or a janazah that is inside of Cape Town, for example, but if it is out of town, even if it's not far, so let's say it's in Worcester or it's in maybe even Paarl, and even if the body is not in the direction of the Qibla, which the person praying faces, so the body is not lying within your Qibla, but such a prayer does not lift the communal obligation from the people of the town where the deceased died. So the janazah salah for the ghaib, for the absent person, won't take the place of the fard kifaya that is required. They must perform the janazah salah there. It is not permissible to perform the funeral prayer over someone who is absent from the place of prayer when the body is in the same town. So let's say there's a janazah in a different part of town and we had Jumu'ah here, so we couldn't make it to the janazah. Can we then make Salatul Janazah for the absent person here? According to the strict rule of the Shafi'i school, it is not permissible. Though this is permissible if it is at the edge of a large city and is a problem to reach. So it's somewhat remote, right? So we've had cases like this before, where somebody passes away, then the janazah is, for example, immediately after Jumu'ah. So it's awkward for people because they can't reach where the janazah is, so they perhaps want to consider praying Salatul Janazah at their own masjid, but lil ghaib, for the absent person. According to the strict rule of the madhab, this is not permitted. Now what happens if you have part of a body? You have part of a body of a person who you know passed away. It's a severed limb, etc. And this part is found. In that case, it is obligatory to wash, to shroud kafan, and to pray over that part, even if the part is a fingernail or a hair, as there is no difference between a little part of the body or a lot. However, provided that the part was separated from the person after death. So you can't find, let's say you found a toenail of a person who you know passed away, but you don't have his body, so then you take that toenail. No, it must be something that was separated from the body after the person had already died. And provided that the rest of the person has not been prayed over already. So if you already prayed over a person, and the person is buried already, and then you find, maybe after the ghusl there was some hair, you don't need to do anything with that, you just bury it as is, right? Because the person has been prayed over already. For if it has, then it is not obligatory to pray over the part. It is unlawful to wash the body of a martyr, a shaheed. It is haram to wash the body of a shaheed, even if in a state of major ritual impurity, even if the person perhaps is a newlywed, as is the case with one of the Sahaba, he was newlywed, he left for jihad, he was killed in the path of Allah, and the Prophet ﷺ saw the angels in the Hurun Ain washing this person, of course, in the unseen realm. So even if the person is in a state of janaba, you don't wash them. A martyr specifically means someone who died in battle with non-Muslims because of fighting them, as opposed to someone who died otherwise, right? So for example, if somebody died of a disease of the abdomen, right? Or they died because they were burned in a fire, or they died because a building fell on them and the like. Those are categories of martyrdom, but it is not martyrdom proper. Like martyrdom proper would be what our brothers in the front lines in Gaza is going through. If they pass away there, that's martyrdom proper. Otherwise, from fighting them, as opposed to someone who died. Otherwise, such a person killed out of oppression, for example, when not in battle, or who died from fighting non-polytheists like Muslims fighting with one another. It is recommended that war gear be removed from the body, such as a breastplate and the like. Now, of course, we have different forms of armor in this day and age. But it's best that that be removed. And it is best to bury the martyr in the rest of his blood-stained clothes, for he will be risen on the day of Qiyamah with their wounds being badges of honor before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Since it is the effect of ibadah, it is the effect of worship. However, the responsible family member may nevertheless remove the garment and shroud the body before the burial. Maybe the family wants to do that, so they may do so, and that's completely fine. Now we move on to the janazah of a baby, particularly a stillborn. A premature baby, meaning a baby born before 6 full months, that's what we consider premature in Islamic law, that dies would be treated as an adult, meaning you do the same thing that you would do for an adult. If the baby gave a cry or a sneeze or a cough or it showed some form of movement when it left the body of the mother. And treated as an adult, meaning it is obligatory to wash, shroud, pray over, and bury the baby, since its life and death have been verified. If it did not, meaning if there was no sound, there was no cry, there was no sneeze, there was no cough, there was no movement. If that's the case, then if it reached 4 months in the womb, because 4 months, 120 days, that's considered the time of nafkhi ruh, where the soul is blown into the fetus. So if it reached 4 months, then it is washed and it is buried. But no janazah salah is performed. If it reached 4 months. If it did not reach 4 months yet, then it is only obligatory to bury the body and not wash and not shroud, which would be quite difficult in any case, because the body wouldn't be a fully formed body. It would be very soft and sort of fragile. The burial, this is in general again. Are there any questions about the stillborn specifically? Yes. Well, the thing is, if you can establish it, it's not that it is your duty to go and establish it, but if you know, somehow you know, that is a fingernail from the deceased. For example, if you discover a nail in the bir that was, you know, you were washing the body in, and whose else could it be? You know what I mean? So there you have evidence that it belonged to that particular deceased, and then you know. But again, in that case, you wouldn't do anything. If there's doubt, then you leave it. You leave it, right? You don't consider, okay, this is maybe from that person. We don't work on doubt. We work on evidence and probability. You just give it a wash. You just rinse it. You just wash it like that. So similarly, if you have a situation, this is a side note based on that question, if you have a situation where there's a body that for some reason or the other is fragile, right? So for example, the person died in a fire, or the person was in a car crash, and there's lots of open wounds, or the skin is very soft and tender and the like, then you stick to the bare minimum. So you just rinse, and that's it. And if rinsing itself is going to cause damage, you can even resort to tayammum in place of rinsing. And if that too would cause damage, then you just leave the whole process entirely. So there's flexibility, right? You have your standard rule, but there's flexibility in cases of need. Okay? Now, right? No. So the question is, if you don't have the body, if there's no retrieval of the body, right, then do you still perform Salatul Janazah upon that person? No, you don't. You don't. The burial should take place immediately. But okay, there's a good example. Because you may after a while discover there's some remains of the person in the ocean or that washes up on the shore or in the shark's belly. Or whatever the case may be. Then you would have evidence. This person died. There's some perhaps DNA testing. What looks like this person's remains. There you have a good example of. Okay, you do the ghusl. Do the kafan. You do the salah. And then you're done. But in that case you have evidence that it's probably this person. The burial should take place immediately after the janazah salah. And it should not be delayed to wait for anyone besides the responsible family member, the wali, so to speak, provided that that person is reasonably nearby. If it is not feared that, look here, if we're going to wait for the wali, this body is going to decompose, right? There may be a situation like that. In that case, you don't even wait for the wali. You bury the person immediately. It is best that the bier be carried by its poles, sometimes by four men, one pole on each shoulder, and the poles being parallel with the bier and supporting it. Two ends forward, two ends back. And sometimes by five, the fifth man between the two forward poles. It is recommended that the bearers walk faster than a usual pace, but they shouldn't trot. They shouldn't run or hasten in such a way that it's a trot, but they should walk faster than a usual pace. The idea is you're hastening this person to the hereafter. If it was a good person, you're hastening them to the reward in the hereafter. If it was not a good person, you're hastening them to the hereafter. Right? It is recommended for men to follow the bier to the place of burial close enough behind to be considered part of the funeral procession. This is also part of our culture, right? Men just somehow know that, look, there's the bier going, let's follow, right? It is offensive, makruh, to follow it with fire or incense burners, which are likewise offensive at the burial itself. To make a special myang pot now, you know, do these type of rituals that are not part of the janazah, that's considered makruh. Now we go into the burial itself, burying the body. Then the deceased is buried, which is fard kifaya. It is best to bury him in the cemetery. So that gives you an idea that it's not wajib that it must be a cemetery. It is afdal for it to be a cemetery. Now, of course, you need to consider the law of the land as well. If you're just going to bury a body in your backyard, you know, that may not go off so well with the council. And you may end up having to dig the body up. So don't do that, right? It is unlawful to bury someone where another person has been buried unless the previous body is completely disintegrated, completely decomposed. Now, the grave diggers and the like, they have their statistics and their standards upon which they usually work. And it differs from place to place. It differs from country to country, from climate to climate. How long on average does it take for a body to completely decompose? The grave diggers would know that better than anyone else. Here, I know that people have buried as soon as 10 years after the previous person passed away. I don't know the exact details, but if there's any uncertainty, you should rather avoid that. And yes, Bismillah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the bones do decompose. But they take a lot longer than Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like 10 years, year, I've seen graves being dug open where 10 years ago there was a body there. They dig it open today, there's nothing there. So it differs from place to place, but again, it depends on the climate and the conditions and the like. So the condition here, it states, such that nothing remains, neither flesh nor bone, right? So there must be nothing. It is also unlawful to bury two people in the same grave unless necessary, right? You also the mass graves in Gaza, right? So people asked me at that time, like, what's happening here? Like, is this even allowed? Obviously there, it's a matter of darura. It's a matter of necessity. There's no other choice. There are graves on pavements. There are graves outside hospital doors. Huge graves, many bodies. Because they don't have a choice. You don't have the luxury of having a separate janazah for each person. So, as when there has been much killing or death, in which case a wall should ideally be made in between the two bodies as a barrier. Did you see that being done? No. Because there's... You're doing 100 bodies in a single hole. You don't have that type of luxury, right? And again, this is not something that you should be concerned about, right? And Allah knows best. If the bodies differ in gender, this is even more imperative, especially when two people of the same gender are not related. Suppose someone dies on a ship and it is impossible to bury him on land. In that case, the body is placed tightly between two planks and is released, it says here, thrown into the sea, but released into the sea to obviate bloating. The planks is there to obviate bloating. So that it reaches the shore, even if the inhabitants of that land that's close by are non-Muslims, since there's a possibility that a Muslim may find the body and bury it facing the direction of the Qibla. Now, just like we did for the ghusl and for the kafan, we spoke about what's the bare minimum. So you know, if you're in that situation and you did that much, you're safe. For the ghusl, what was the bare minimum? What was the bare minimum? Water over the whole body. That's the bare minimum. If you've done that, you know you're safe. For the kafan, what's the bare minimum? To cover the aura of the person, for the male appropriately, for the woman appropriately. That's the bare minimum. So if you've done that, you're safe. For the salah, what's the bare minimum? Okay, the salah would remain the salah, but it would be the four takbirs, the fatiha, the salawat, dua for the deceased. That's the bare minimum, right? Now we get to the burial. The obligatory minimum for a grave is that it conceals the odor of the body. So we have this impression in our mind that the grave must be 6 feet, right? But that's not the bare minimum. That's like ideal. We'll get to that. So it must conceal the odor of the body and that it protects it from being dug up and eaten by animals. It is recommended to dig the grave wider than the obligatory minimum and that its depth equal the height of an average man with his arms fully extended upwards. No graves are dug like this anymore. The biggest or the deepest grave you're going to get is that it's the height of an average person, say 1.2 meters or something like that. No, 1.2, about 2 meters, 2.1, 2.2. That's the deepest that you're going to get, that I've seen at least, which is fine. Now, how should the grave be dug, right? What we normally do here is you dig a straight rectangular hole. The body is placed on the side and planks are used to create a cavity for that body. Ideally though, a lahd, which is what this image is showing, I'll just get it on the screen for those online. This is slide number 60. Okay, a lahd is a grave with a lateral hollow. right? You see it there? So it goes, the rectangular hole is this part here, and then you have the lateral hollow inside there. So that's actually dug into the ground as opposed to using planks. A laht, a grave with a lateral hollow large enough for the body to be dug into the side of the bottom of the grave, that it is towards the direction of the Qibla, is superior, meaning better than, a shaq. What is a shaq? A shaq is the same thing, but instead of digging into the side, so you have the lateral hollow, and then you have another deeper area where the body is placed here at the bottom, right? And then covered at the top with planks like that. So those are the two types that you generally, you know, find in the fiqh books. Ours is neither this one nor that one. It's kind of a combination of the laht and the shaq, where we use the wall of the grave and you use planks to create another cavity. Still fine. Meaning a simple trench dug down into the middle of the floor of the grave with low block walls raised along the trench's sides in which the deceased is placed before the walls are ceilinged with blocks or planks. And the earth is shoveled back into the grave on top of them, unless the earth is soft, in which case the shaq is preferable. So like basically digging a hollow inside of the grave and then placing the body inside of it and covering it. If the earth is soft, then that is better. This is an important one. You know, when I grew up, it was like a thing. If somebody left the fold of Islam, people would speak about, hulle gaat in 'n kus begrawe word. Isn't it? I don't know if you've come across that before. It's like, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. That is the worst possible thing. So it's associated with not being a Muslim. But this is not true. Because it's not even haram to bury in a coffin. It is makruh. It is disliked, offensive to bury the deceased in a coffin or to place a pillow inside of the grave for the deceased. Why is it makruh? It's got nothing to do with other religions. It's because it's wasteful. It's wasteful. Now, what would be an interesting exercise for you to do is actually go and look at the price of coffins. And you'll understand just how wasteful it is. Okay? However, unless the earth is soft, like it's quick to fall, or it's moist, so you have very muddy ground, Allah alone knows where you live, right? Maybe you're living in a place where the sand is not even considered normal. So it may be problematic to work with. In which case, it's not makruh. It's not makruh. In COVID, we had kind of a debacle as to what to do with the body, right? Must it be wrapped twice? Must it be in a plastic bag? People got very touchy about this, you know, because it's not normal. People are afraid of what they are not accustomed to. And there were even some suggestions that a coffin should be used that must be sealed off. And oh, that was an outrage for people. But here you can see there is room for it. There is room for it. So the general rule is that it's makruh. I'm not encouraging it. But the point is, if there's a specific need for it, the ruling is there. If otherwise, then even if a coffin was stipulated by the deceased in his will, it will not be provided. It's another one of those things where the deceased says, look, can you put me in a coffin rather? I've got some non-Muslim family. They would prefer that. That would be ignored. Okay? Men should bury the deceased, even if the deceased is female, in which case the best suited is the husband, if able, and then for either sex, those listed in the funeral prayer preference that we spoke about before, who must lead the janazah salah. Except that when two are on the same level, such as two sons or brothers, then the most learned in sacred law, the most knowledgeable in Islam, is preferred to the elder, to the oldest one. Unlike the order for the salah, in which case preference was given to the older one. The purpose thereof being knowledge of the rules of burial, which a learned person is likely to know better than others. It is recommended that the number of men that go down into the hole be an odd number. It's recommended that the number of men that goes down into the hole be an odd number. Now, for a lady, generally, we would practice on the following. But for a man, you wouldn't really see people practicing on this. It is preferable. It is sunnah. Actually, the word that's being used here is not sunnah, but it would be ideal. To conceal the grave with a cloth. So for a lady's janazah, this is standard practice. They would take a cloth, cover the hole, place the body inside of that, and work underneath. For a man, not so much. A blanket is stretched over the grave about a half a meter above the level of the ground. Helpers holding each corner while another person stands down in the grave at the foot end, ready to take the body from the bier. This is especially necessary when burying a female and is done because something might be disclosed of the deceased that is desirable to conceal. The head of the deceased that is desirable, sorry, the head of the deceased is placed near the foot of the grave. Foot meaning the end which will accommodate the feet when the body is in place, and the body is slid from the bier head first into the ground. It is recommended for the person burying the deceased who is standing in the grave, taking the body, and there may be more than one, as we said, to say, Bismillahi, in the name of Allah, wa ala millati Rasulillahi, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and upon the method of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And then to make dua for the deceased inside the grave. Number three, to place a block as a pillow for the person. This is, I've never seen this being done. The block perhaps, but not this next part. It is recommended to place a block inside as a pillow and to open up the shroud. To open up the shroud enough to lay his cheek directly on the surface of the block. So it would be the right cheek. As this is more expressive of lowliness. You're going back to the ground. It's also symbolic of putting your head onto the ground throughout your life in sajda for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So I haven't really seen anybody doing this. I don't know if you have, but it is recommended in our fiqh. Again, all of these recommendations, if you don't see it being done, it's not something that you should insist upon. Because more than likely, if others there are not familiar with it, and you insist upon it, you're going to be the next one in the grave. So rather don't. The body must be placed facing the direction of the Qibla. And this is necessary. This is a must. This is not a recommendation. If buried facing the other way or lying on his back, he is disinterred. The body should be dug up and reburied facing the direction of the Qibla. It's a serious thing. Now, I wasn't aware until after my father passed away, rahimahullah, we buried him in the Muizenberg Maqbara. 99% of the bodies there are buried in the wrong direction. It's not buried facing the Qibla. Nowadays, some of the burials have shifted, so they've turned that. And we used to see like one or two like that, but it never occurred to me that everybody is buried in the incorrect direction in that particular Maqbara. Until afterwards. Now, if you discover this afterwards and the body's already, you know, most likely decomposed, you obviously don't dig the body up then. But just so you know, if you are going to be buried in Muizenberg Cemetery, it's generally reserved for those who live that side or lived that side during the apartheid era. My father grew up in Cork Bay. Then make sure that you get your grave buried in the right direction. Right? Because it's a must. It's not like a recommendation. The other maqbaras here in Cape Town, I haven't seen an issue such as this, but that one in particular is problematic. The lateral hollow dug into the side of the grave, so in our case, the planks in that area inside for the body is walled up with blocks, with planks in our case, after the body has been placed in it, and before filling the grave, and it is sunnah to use 9 planks or 9 blocks. The person at the graveside, this is for all of us when you attend the janazah, should take 3 handfuls of earth using 2 hands and throw it into the grave, saying, Minha khalaqanakum, from it we created you. Wa fiha nu'idukum, and into it we return you. Wa minha nukhrijukum taratan ukhra, and from it we shall bring you forth another time. It's quoting a verse in the Quran, right? And that's the reality of what's happening there. It's not a permanent abode. You're there for a temporary time period, you'll be extracted again. Then the grave is filled in using shovels, after which one stays for a moment, for a while. Number one, to instruct the deceased, to make talqeen, right? What we call the talqeen. And the talqeen generally consists of the answers the person will need to know when Munkar and Nakir question him in the grave as to his مَنْ رَبُّكَ وَمَا دِينُكَ وَمَا هَذَا رَجُلْ بُعِثَ فِيكُمْ. Who is your Lord? What is your way of life? Who is this man that has been sent among you? So that's generally what the contents of the talqeen entails. If you've never done so, go open up your Al-Mufida at home or any other fiqh kitab that you may have. Go read the talqeen and read the translation. It's a profound reminder. And if you attend a janazah, do not be from among those who stand and chat around while the burial is taking place. It's extremely disrespectful. People stand, chat, smoke, laugh, joke about, sitting on that side, sitting on that side. You're there for the janazah. Sit and observe, right? Because the purpose of visiting the graves is to remind us of death. Then number two, to supplicate for the deceased, to make dua for the deceased. Allahumma thabbitu ala al-haq, Allahumma laqinu hujjatahu, Allahumma ghafir lahu, and all of the other du'as. And then number three, to ask Allah for forgiveness for this person. That's what we do, you know, afterwards. One should raise the grave surface, meaning higher than ground level, up to one span, about 23 centimeters above the ground, so that it can be known that there's a grave there, so that it can be visited, and so that it can be respected. Except in countries at war with Muslims, where it should not be raised, but rather concealed, so as to prevent tampering and meddling with the graves. To make its top flat is better than to mound it in a hill, and no earth should be added when leveling it, other than what was excavated from it. So you shouldn't bring other sand elsewhere and now add to it at the top. It is recommended to sprinkle water over the grave and to put pebbles on it. I haven't seen the pebbles part being done. Perhaps afterwards, yes, people come back and then they, you know, do that. But that's a recommendation. So there's no recommendation of flowers, there's no recommendation of other stuff, but the pebbles is actually a recommendation in our fiqh. Now, this is important. It is considered makruh to whiten the grave with plaster, to build a dome-like structure or a house over the grave. Now, this is in direct contradiction with the practice at the kramats. The exception is given in our fiqh, unless it is the graves of righteous, pious people who are visited, who are respected and revered for various reasons. So an exception is given for that. But generally, regular graves should be kept plain and simple. To put khaluq or a perfume on the grave is considered makruh. To have stuff, incense and stuff burning on there, add rose water, etc., that's considered makruh. There's no benefit and it's a waste of money. So leave that. What's still about this notion of putting money onto the graves or under the gravestone or things like that? People do this type of thing. That is not allowed. Number four, it is considered makruh to place an inscription on the grave. This is the original ruling, meaning to write something on the grave, whether it is the name of the deceased or something other than that, on a board at the head of the grave or on something else, unless the deceased is a friend of Allah. or a religious scholar, in which case his name is written so that he may be visited and honored, it then not being offensive. Again, in the sharh, in the commentary of this, scholars add that this is the standard rule. This is the standard rule. However, if you are in a context wherein, without putting the name on the grave would be lost, the grave would be forgotten and abandoned, then you may do what is necessary to the extent that is required. But this remains the original rule. So if you don't clearly mark a particular grave, after a couple of years, if it's not treated and looked after, it will be erased, it will be taken away, it will disappear. Somebody else will be buried there, and there's nothing that you can do about that. So to place a gravestone with a bare minimum for identification purposes is permissible. It's permissible. You can consider the karaha, the disliked nature of it, for anything that is considered going overboard, right? Don't have an elaborate gravestone. Don't have an elaborate inscription on the gravestone, a whole message or bayan written on there, right? Keep it as simple as possible. My teacher, rahimahullah ta'ala, when his family members passed away, he never had inscriptions on the gravestones. He kept it completely blank, but it would be clearly marked. His gravestone, there's a plank there, it has his name on it, but he's definitely of those who would be part of the exception, inshallah. Or, it is also makruh to put a pillow or mattress under the deceased. In case you thought you're going to lie in comfort, your Sealy Posturepedic is not going to be allowed in there, right? No mattresses, no pillows therein. Now, have we reached Maghrib's waqt yet? Okay. Visiting the graves and consoling the bereaved. It is recommended for men to visit the graves. Specifically recommended, as in it is encouraged for men to visit the graves of Muslims, especially on Fridays. As for visiting the graves of non-Muslims, it is permissible. Because that question comes up a lot. It's permissible. The spirit of the dead person has a connection with his grave that is never severed, but it is stronger from the mid-afternoon Asr prayer on a Thursday until sunrise on a Saturday. That's when the connection is specifically stronger, according to our scholars in fiqh. Which is why people often visit the graves on Friday and on Thursday afternoon. There is no harm in wearing one's shoes when visiting or walking between the graves. The visitor walks up to the grave as close as he would if the deceased were alive and says, "Assalamu alayka wa assalamu alaykum ya dar wa qawmi al-mu'mineen inna insha'allahu bikum lahikun nas'alullaha lana wa lakum al-afiyah." This is a supplication. Peace be upon you, O abode of believing people. Insha'Allah, we'll be joining you soon. We ask Allah to pardon us and to pardon you. So we learn that dua, and you'll know what to say when you get to the grave. It is sunnah to recite as much of the Quran as is easy and to make dua for the forgiveness of the deceased while facing the direction of the Qibla, as dua benefits the deceased and they are more likely to be answered if made after reciting the Quran. And there are some scholarly discussions about whether the recitation of Quran reaches the deceased or not, but inshallah I'll do an online Q&A session and deal with that therein. As for women, the strict ruling of the madhab is that it is offensive for women to visit the graves. Specifically, as you can see, the sharh quite harsh, he says, because of their lack of fortitude and excessive grief. So I'll add a caveat here. Don't consider this as a prohibition, as in women cannot visit the graves. They should not visit the graves, ideally, if it is going to cause them to become excessively depressed or in a state of grief or in a state of sorrow. Why? Why does the madhab say that it is offensive? Because the Prophet ﷺ, while he said, I used to prohibit you from visiting the graves, فَالْآنَ زُورُوهَا, but now visit it. فَإِنَّهَا تُذَكِّرُكُمْ الْمَوْتِ, because it reminds you of death, it reminds you of the hereafter. In a separate narration, he says that Allah is displeased with زَوَّارَاتِ الْكُبُورِ, those women who frequently visit the graves. They frequently visit the graves. That is problematic. So as to avoid that, the madhab regards it as offensive. But it is entirely permissible for a woman to visit the graves of a loved one, especially if she can, you know, behave as is appropriate. Bearing in mind that the Prophet ﷺ, I mentioned this hadith not too long ago, he came across a grave of a woman whose child had passed away. And she was not behaving appropriately, right? As a Muslim should. He respected her nonetheless, and he just left. He spoke about it later. We should respect people's grieving process, right? The Sharia is not hard on people's grieving processes, especially when they are not in control of what is happening with, you know, within them. And we should respect it as well, right? What is highly problematic is if people deliberately mourn and grieve and relive that grief again and again, you know, deliberately bringing up those feelings consciously and intentionally. That's problematic. Any dislikedness does not apply to visiting the grave of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which people should do. In this, is they visiting the graves of the prophets, the righteous, and the learned as well. Inshallah. So we'll conclude on that note. We have 4 slides remaining and a plethora of possible questions that may come out from this. So inshallah, I would consider that to cover this in an online session as well as your Q&A bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. As for next week, we will be starting with the fiqh of fasting, because we have 4 weeks, 4 Wednesdays left until Ramadan, if my calculations are correct. So we'll start with the fiqh of fasting next week, bi-idhnillah. There are 4 slides remaining here, which I'll do online. And please, I would encourage you also to ask your questions, because there's a lot of potential questions that come out here as well. 3 days, 7 days, 40 days, practices after the people have passed away, food at the janazah, the grieving process, what to say to people who have lost loved ones. So we'll cover all of that in that session. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الصلاة حي حي على الفلاح حي على الفلاح الله أكبر